Hello and welcome back to Code Bytes, sponsored by Search 5.0. And today we're excited to welcome Johnny Sinclair to the podcast. Johnny is a very successful technology leader working in multiple different domains and currently heads up at InclueTech, who are an accessible inclusion software development company within the public safety space, which we'll hear more about with this conversation. Johnny is a STEM ambassador and a huge advocate across total inclusion and diversity. I hope you enjoy this conversation. So, Johnny, thank you very much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Stephen. It's great to be here.
I know time is a premium because you are a busy man these days.
Like to keep busy.
Yeah. No, Johnny, listen, really, really pleased to have you on. And I think you've got a lot to offer, as well. So, Johnny, do you want to kick things off and just give us an overview of your background and your career to date?
Yeah, so born and raised in Belfast and done my GCSEs and A-levels in computing IT along with a few other subjects, which probably didn't do as well in, but had a real passion for IT, probably birthed out of the fact that my dad was in IT as a project manager, program manager back in the bank. And from then, I spent a lot of time playing with computers, taking them apart, back in the DOS days and whatnot. And, that got me into the degree program and in Queens, where, really my journey, my career started when I done my placement with SAP, who are the massive German software giant who produce ERP and CRM software. And they were one of the very early FDIs to come into Belfast. So when I done my placement, they were based in the University of Ulster campus out there, amongst the spin-in companies. And it was a great experience because they were sort of doing research and development. It was very few organizations doing sort of core pure research. And it was their approach to research that really inspired me to pursue an industrial PhD then within their organization, sort of supported by Queen. So it was an industrial PhD. And it provided me with a different approach to how I've continued my career. It was this mindset for analyzing theories and problems, simplifying them and generating solutions or understanding how to come up with different concepts. And that in turn has led me to take on a variety of roles over the last lot of years, leading and building different development teams within FDIs and within Indigenous companies, which has been great. I've had a variety and worked in various sectors from social media, cybersecurity, interior design, believe it or not, healthcare and public safety. So it's been great. And it's all through that passion to really understand a problem, create a solution. And that came from that sort of research mentality that was instilled in me from working in SAP.
Brilliant. So that's a really good overall collective amount of experience you've gained there, Johnny, in different sectors, different types of businesses too. And you're now working at InclueTech. For those that aren't aware, Johnny, of who InclueTech are, can you give us a quick overview?
Yeah, so InclueTech are an Indigenous NI startup founded by Becca Hume. And InclueTech's main focus and passion is around building inclusive technologies for the public safety. So our core product, before InclueTech was named InclueTech, the company was Tap SOS. So some people may have heard of Tap SOS. And that product is essentially delivering non-verbal emergency support for 999, so for blue lights. So for those who, for a variety of reasons, may have some vulnerability, whether that be through disability or through situation. So it could be partially sighted, hard of hearing, could be neurodiverse, and they find it difficult to use the existing verbal means for communicating an emergency to the blue lights community. Our app is there to support them in communicating their emergency situation.
Brilliant. That's a very worthwhile platform and product making a change. Johnny, we always like delving into success influencers, for our guests. And you're somebody who gets involved in some great initiatives and you've always got lots of things going on, which is great to see. But what would you say is your driving force?
No, as you've mentioned, I'm involved in a lot of STEM activities and involved in a lot of diversity initiatives. But at the heart of essentially everything I do in terms of a day-to-day, in terms of working with technology organization development teams, it's really down to that passion that a lot of us, if not all of us, have in this sector, which is a passion to see the work we've done through development get into the hands of end users and to provide a positive experience that improves someone's life, whether that be in their workplace or in their personal lives. So, you know, it's what got me into leading teams in the first place, because all too often, you know, the things that we work on, the things that we build, can potentially end up on the shelf, and not in the hands of users. And, you know, all too often, the solutions that we make can be built for the few, not the many. And, you know, they're also built in a lot of cases without engagement with the real end user, which it can be unfortunate, but, you know, it's the way sort of the pace of business has gone. And therefore, we're losing those true requirements and true purpose. And as I said, that's the reason I got into leadership, is to support and enable the development team to be a voice for them within the organization, and to enable them to get access to real end users and to deliver something that is built inclusively for everyone and built for purpose. You know, that's what we want at the end of the day. We want people to enjoy the product we build. If we're building something and no one's actually using it or enjoying it, then what have we been building for? What have we been doing? So everyone out there in development, you know, want someone to use the product they built, and they want people to enjoy what they're using. They don't want to build something and people go, oh, don't like that, or can't use that. It's really difficult to use. So again, it's now stemming back to what I'm doing now in Inclutech, because there are a lot of organizations, you know, for the sake of time, pace, money, whatever, can go quickly through a process and design a product that actually they never understood the core needs of the user, or they never understood the user themselves. And with Inclutech, you know, our core premise is designing inclusively for all, for all those different variety of situations and users who have a variety of different accessibility needs and have challenges with sort of products that are, you know, commonplace out there that they can't use for one reason or another. And, you know, that's what we're doing at Inclutech. We're focusing on designing with everyone in mind and trying to be as open and inclusive and accessible, so that people have the products that they need for, in this case, the emergency situations that they may be faced with on any given day.
That's good. And just on that piece as well, Johnny, because it's a shame that you hear products are developed and, you know, they're put on the shelf through various different reasons that really come down to the end user experience and the actual solution you're trying to find. I mean, with yourselves at Inclutech, Johnny, and the work that you're doing within the accessibility and inclusion community, how would you go about doing that initial research to ensure there's that real good solution within the product you're building?
Yeah, I think, you know, that there's certainly more to be said about understanding the user themselves and their experience, and that comes down to user experience design. And we have a great community in Belfast of UX designers and UX researchers as well, and it's doing more research, understanding more of that design that's needed by a lot of technology organizations today. And there's not, I guess, as much investment in that end of the cycle and those individuals. And certainly, you know, if you look at the likes of University of Ulster, they've had an amazing interaction design course running for many years, if not many decades now. It's hard to call how long it's been running, but so we're doing great things in education. We have great individuals and even great leaders in that space now, and we need to certainly invest a lot more in that end of the spectrum and get organizations to realize the value that concentrating on that area brings to their overall business, because it does. You know, when the users and the companies that they're delivering product and services for, we say, appreciate, see value, and I guess enjoy and find the product that they're using intuitive, then they'll want more, and they'll give good feedback, and then they'll work with you to explore other areas. But when they struggle to use your product or use your service or tool, or when your tool becomes unintuitive, then obviously they're not going to want to work, do more work with you. So again, it all comes back to that understanding that user, understanding your core needs and purpose, and designing with that in mind.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you for that, Johnny. So you've obviously had a successful career in a multitude of different areas. If you were to reflect back at your career so far, what would you say has been the perhaps the biggest challenge that you've had to overcome?
Yeah. You mentioned successful, but it's not without its challenges. I think every career and every path has its challenges. I think probably most people, including leaders, will likely face their biggest challenges during COVID, and same is true for myself. To be honest, several months before COVID hit, I'd moved into a new role, set up a new location development team for USFDI that was coming into Belfast. And whilst I had the experience of sort of building teams, looking for locations and you know, dealing with what would be expected from that role, it was fraught with all sorts of new challenges that many of us experienced, especially those who were leading technology organizations at the time, in the form of recruitment, onboarding, employee well-being, remote working, changing regulations on health and safety. That was difficult. To build a team in any environment, it is a challenging time, especially with what we're seeing now in terms of new skill shortage and the talent gap, and sort of the competing markets that are going on out there. But to have had that, what we say, exacerbated by the challenges of COVID, and then off the back of COVID, we saw a whole new market of, you know, remote working, meaning that companies from outside of NI were then looking at talent in NI because we have a great reputation for the talent here. So then you just exacerbated the recruitment challenges even more than they were when you sort of had to recruit and do sort of virtual interviews and everything else. So, you know, that's probably been my biggest challenge to date, because a lot of other challenges I've had are ones which, you know, there's practices to follow, there's ways and means people have experienced them before, and you can learn from their experiences. You can, whether it's through reading some books, listening to podcasts, there's ways and means around them, those have been experienced. But with COVID, no one had experienced that before. So you're going through a lot of these challenges for the first time, and you're having to look at, you know, different angles of the business all at the same time. So you had to deal with, you know, employee well-being, making sure people were actually okay in their circumstances. I mean, we've got a lot of social problems going on out there in terms of mental health and things, and people working from home who enjoy social collaboration and struggling with the fact that they couldn't have that social collaboration anymore. So, you know, how do you ensure that you're discovering that, or how did you ensure that you were keeping touch with everyone and you know, making sure that everyone was all right in the circumstances? There's so much going on there at one given time, and I have to say that's probably been the biggest challenge of my career, is not only, you know, setting up a site, building a team, trying to deal with all those nuances for the first time and determine and share experiences with other companies, other leaders in the sector. And we've done a lot of forums sharing and working together, which again has stand us in good stead going forward, because a lot of that now we're working with each other in terms of the future challenges for our sector, you know, especially in terms of STEM and diversity. So a lot of those people who got together probably for the first time, because we all sort of could do our jobs nearly independently at that point. We did gather together for meetups and things like that, but we never gathered together to help each other in terms of recruitment, in terms of onboarding, in terms of STEM. And interestingly, whilst we're competitive in those spaces, we were getting together to support one another. And now we're still, you know, there's still groups going where people are getting together to share their problems and their challenges and experiences in terms of how we can improve the sector as a whole together, despite us still being in competitive areas.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that whole, I always preach it, community over competition. How would you assess the sector and the industry now, given where we're at, you know, post-COVID?
Yeah, so pre-COVID, during COVID, post-COVID, we've had one of, you know, the same challenges that we've had, in particular regarding talent. You know, talent has been one of the biggest ones we've had, but, you know, continues to be, we say, elevated and exacerbated more and more by different things that are going on around us. I would say, you know, the pace of technology change is what's behind a lot of it. You know, technology is changing at a rapid pace. Look at the increased adoption of cloud in recent years, the significant volumes and increase of web and mobile development in the last probably 5 years plus, you know, that has changed and introduced trends in terms of the types of talent we need, especially around cloud and JavaScript. And we've seen a lot of that lately, where those are key areas where there's struggles. And that's because whilst there was an increase in adoption in those areas and increased volume of work in those areas, we hadn't really introduced new areas to our education system until sort of that started being adopted. So that's all now starting to come to fruition. You know, the you know, cloud and JavaScript and other aspects have been introduced to the education system in the last probably 3 years or so in terms of tertiary education. And now we're starting to see the fruits of that, but we still have significant skill shortages. And then we have significant leadership shortages in those areas. And then that pace of change has also introduced challenges and heightened risks in terms of security. So we've seen a lot of talk about security, cybersecurity, with Cyber UK last week, which is great to see all the companies here and Burlerfield coming into Belfast. But you know, security has now become a thread ingrained in everything, and everyone who just from a you know, developer developing a piece of back-end code or front-end code has to understand security. And cybersecurity itself is an area where we've got skill shortage and talent shortage. So again, you know, that's what I'm saying has, I guess, exacerbated that skill shortage. It's new, all of these new trends, all of these new issues are coming in. And then as you've got that, you've got the ongoing battle of decisions being made. And you know, I've had this in probably nearly every organization I've been in, which is, you know, how do you balance innovation versus legacy? You know, as technology pace continues to change rapidly and significantly, you're faced with the decisions of, you know, do I upgrade versions? Do I change technologies? Do I re-architect solutions? When do I do that? How do I do that in a balanced way? But as technology keeps pushing forward, you know, you're constantly challenged because existing systems and more of those systems become, in principle, legacy. You know, what we're seeing now, things like remote working, is trying to, how do you maintain collaboration? How do you avoid groupthink in such that you're not getting left behind as technology continually evolves? Sustainability, you know, a lot of talk about sustainability in terms of the energy consumption, electronic waste when you're building solutions. And then probably more prevalent more recently is ethics and compliance. You know, the rise of AI, you know, LLMs, large language models, and even GDPR in the background is, you know, which is tending into AI and things and the regulation on the data and how you use data. You know, all of that's coming to the fore now as a challenge because of technology evolution and the pace of change. So as these new technologies have come out and evolved, companies are then faced with additional challenges and then additional skill shortage areas, you know, where we have to understand AI, we have to understand how to make solutions sustainable. And they're all new skills to be introduced to existing developers, existing leaders, and even to be introduced into the education system. And you can tell I can probably talk for ages on this topic, but you know, I think that's it. It's that pace of change, and in turn that pace of change inducing this issue with how do we keep up with the skills needed, you know, in our industry, and you know, how do we continually promote, I guess, proactive learning and development?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a couple of really good indications there that you spoke about, and it's all about the balance as well, Johnny. I think Northern Ireland is obviously in a good position going forward with perhaps our investments, and I think we're only going to see more growth having the access perhaps to two different markets, Johnny. So kind of to establish and come back to that skills gap piece, what do you feel that we need to be doing more of as a whole community?
It's a very good question. And there's certainly lots of challenges there, but in particular, and you know, we mentioned it earlier, I have a lot of investment in STEM engagement, whether it be, you know, W5 Life, Bring It On, you know, Young Enterprise, and various others. I don't want to miss them all, but I will, you know, just mention a few there. There's a lot going on in the sector. I think we have to do a lot more to collaborate together, bring a lot of that attention to the industry in such a way where we can all invest our time. There's a lot of time to be invested from the folks in the sector, and there's a lot of people want to participate and engage in that. But particularly ensuring that we invest heavily in the 11 to 16 year old group. Variety of examples, even recently, where, you know, there's schools where, you know, you're getting maybe half a dozen pupils signing up to IT, and you're getting probably, you know, five, six times as many signing up to other topics, maybe such as home economics and geography, and they're all great topics, but you know, look at the prevalence of IT across sectors, across agriculture, across manufacturing, and the need for IT skills and software skills as a whole, has been increasing for I don't know how many years now, and will not stop. So we need to ensure that more is being done to provide mandatory education at nearly all levels, from primary through, of some form of technology knowledge and education, especially coming through to things like design, data, understanding data and data analysis, and even coding, because there's a wide diversity of skills in tech. It's not just all coding, and that's, I think, can be lost. You know, even product management and understanding how a product's built. You know, there's a wide diversity of skills in tech, and it's starting to ingrain some of that in education alongside the traditional topics, because you know, it's cross sectors. So that 11 to 16 year old category in particular, we need to emphasize more on, because that's when decisions are being made about career paths and career journeys, and certainly, you know, we do a lot in sort of post-tertiary and post-tertiary to convert people, and there's a great lot of conversion courses being done. But in fairness, if we invested more in 11, 16 year old category and get people into the primary courses that are available, and not just the conversion courses, then you know, we'd catch them earlier, we'd do a lot earlier and get them into the sector earlier. And then there's a lot to be said for, and it's certainly more probably opinionated from myself, but looking into the similar models that they're doing in the likes of England with the T-levels and those sort of technical, more apprentice-led educational strands, I think, you know, we have to start looking at that in NI. Definitely, there's a lot to be said. There's great work being done by the colleges, by the Belfast Met and CERC and others, in terms of the apprenticeship schemes. And a lot of those folks are coming out very well-versed and very capable in hands-on work, whether that be development, design, and a variety of others, and even networking and security. So there's a lot to be said for the capability that they're coming out with is phenomenal. And there may be some theory to be learned, but it's very easy to teach the theory, and it takes a lot longer to teach some of the practical skills. So again, a lot to be said for the apprenticeship model. I think it's great, and there's some great benefits to it, in fairness. Not to put people off the university education pathways, but when in the apprenticeship model, you're going into sort of a full-time job and working, getting paid for that, as well as not having potentially some of the fees that you get. There's significant benefits there as well to be looked at. And we have to learn from how do we get a hybridized education system with online learning, apprenticeship learning, and the traditional methods we've had through university brought together a bit more cohesively to provide broader offerings. And how do we cross-pollinate people from apprenticeship models into university into apprenticeship models more so. A lot to be thought of, a lot to be learned, a lot of challenges for different organizations and bodies to work on over the next few years to improve that diversity of education.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it definitely comes from more of a grassroots approach, as you mentioned, Johnny, at that early on school years, between the age of 11 to 16. And I think the great thing as well about the Code Bytes podcast is, you know, we speak with a number of different tech leaders, and you know, there's even people who haven't actually went down, you know, the traditional route. And there's been some who have been self-taught coding, you know, and just right place, right time. So there's lots of different opportunities out there for people. And as you say, it's about just highlighting those, evolving and making it more cohesive, Johnny. So thank you for that.
Totally agree. And in fairness, even some of the best engineers I've hired, you know, being neurodiverse and haven't gone through traditional pathways due to their neurodiversity, and them having to drop out potentially, built up their own portfolios and you know, being very, very good and if not excellent engineers in the field. So, you know, as I said, some of the best ones I've hired have not come through traditional methods.
Brilliant. That probably comes on nicely, Johnny, to the next topic, which is talking talent. And I'm keen to learn, because obviously, like, you've built a lot of teams, I would say, over the number of years. What would you look for in top talent? What key traits would you like to see in applicants?
Yeah, and I've always, I guess, to most organizations' point of view, been very controversial in how I approach interviewing and looking for talent, because a lot of organizations have a very traditional or very structured model of, you know, oh, they have to have a degree, or even if they don't have that, there has to be certain sort of ways about interviewing. And I think we have to get away from that. We have to be open-minded. We have to look at it as about capability, not qualification or titles. we have to focus about building diverse teams. No, you don't want a group of clones. So whether it be age, ethnicity, sex, disability, even the industry or the types of organization or role experience that people have had, all of these diverse perspectives, you know, bring different ideas and value to the table when you're building a solution. So to me, have too rigid a process. And I was at a forum group the other day where we were discussing sort of process and how the process should or shouldn't be to support folks with various, I guess, vulnerabilities or disabilities. And the fact remains that there's no one set process. You know, you have to be open-minded, as I said. You have to adjust your process per the needs of the person that you're engaging. Different people engage in different ways. So organizations, to me, you know, at the end of the day, when they're focused on building teams and they're focused on even the likes of the topic of what they call retention, we shouldn't be talking about retention, because when retention is used, it suggests that there's some form of ownership. We don't own or control employees. You want them to belong. They're part of your team. They're part of, you know, to a degree, it's an extension of family. You know, you're working with them 8 hours a day. So, you know, you want to build solid relationships and trust. You want them to feel part of the team and organization, that they can contribute and add value to products and services. So when you're identifying individuals that you want to bring on to that team, it's all about attitude, engagement, you know, behavioral traits and their capability. So you have a conversation with them about whatever the area is, whether it's a technical coding area that you're hiring for or design area. And do you understand their attitudes towards the approach that they would take to their work and their ability to, you know, do certain activities within that work? So, you know, through conversation and you talking, you know, if you're the interviewer themselves have to be well versed in the area and such that they can have a conversation. And through that conversation, you'll quickly identify whether someone knows their role and their capability and their task, or whether someone can't do that piece of work. You know, you can sort of adjudicate that through conversation. So, you know, if I'm talking about capabilities in Java, and we're having a conversation about how you build something or the different approaches to, you know, creating solution and the techniques or the functions that will be used, you can quickly understand if someone's trying to call your bluff or whether someone does know what they're talking about through conversation. And it doesn't need to be write this up on a whiteboard and create this function to do this, because sometimes that can be a negative experience for someone. And you're trying to get someone on the fly to think about how they would do something, which they'd probably spend some time writing down on paper, trying to design and think about it, thinking about all the different requirements. And when you're trying to ask someone on the fly to do that, it's, you know, you wouldn't do that in business. You know, if you had to solve a problem for a client, you would sit with the client and ask them the requirements, try and understand their problem, look at the different sort of integration points, the different options you have from an architecture perspective. And then you would start, you know, eventually going to code. You wouldn't just code immediately once the client says, I want to do this. So to ask it in an interview, I think, that, you know, to agree equally is a bit excessive. And I think you have to be more, as I said, open-minded and more engaged with the individual. It's about, you know, building that relationship and trust, understanding their attitudes and behaviors, as well as understanding their capability and ignoring nearly to a degree and overlooking their qualification and title. One of the interesting things I certainly used to do in organizations with the interview group or panel was give them a very brief abstract or synopsis of an individual, not give them a CV. Because as soon as they seen the CV, maybe the previous organizations they worked at, what university went to, their qualification, or the titles that they had for their previous roles, that introduced a bias. And it's about removing all that bias from the equation, in such that you're going in very open-minded, as I said. And it's all back to that same phrase I use, open-minded. You have to treat each individual as an individual, as completely, you know, you don't know what they bring to the table. And usually they'll bring a different opinion and perspective and diversity, hopefully, from all of the others in the team. And you share and learn together, you know, in a group. One of your weaknesses will be their strength, and their strengths will be your weakness. So, you know, you learn from one another.
Yeah, this has been fascinating, Johnny, and definitely hiring on capabilities is, and you mentioned yourself that you've hired some of the best developers have went through the university route. And obviously we see it quite a lot still on the work that we do within recruitment, that university degree is number one, you know, within essential criteria. Why do you think that still is the case for a lot of companies, Johnny?
Yeah, I think thankfully it is getting less and less seen out there. I think it's still the case because you know, it's seen as I guess the pinnacle of an education system, which, you know, to a degree, that education system has become far more hybridized, and it's not so much the case. And there are different ways to learn for different people. So coming back to Inclutech and inclusivity and diversity, and looking at the different aspects of accessibility, there's certain people learn by practical hands-on approaches, which is the apprenticeship model. They don't necessarily do well sitting in a room full of 100 old people listening to a lecture on theoreticals. You know, just don't, you know, and you know, I've had personal experience with people I've worked with people in extended family who learn in different ways and don't necessarily do the best when it comes to straightforward academic theoretical learning and a paper-based test where they have to write lots. They learn far better and actually prove themselves far more when they have something practical to put their hands to and build something, which in essence, when you're out there in the industry, the core piece of your day-to-day job is actually building a product. It's not writing a report or paper on something and defining back to someone what the theories are. You're actually building the product. You have to understand the theories, yes, granted, but it's building the product. At the end of the day, it's the core outcome or output of the work that you'll do in your career. So there's, as I said, there's a lot to be said for a lot of the benefits of the apprenticeship model and how we ingrain those back into some of the traditional educational system and nearly turn it on its head, which is why, you know, you're seeing a lot more companies, you know, scrap this requirement for a degree, because it can be seen that there's a lot of people have achieved better outcomes and results from potentially going through different pathways. So you do need a diverse spectrum. You need people with degrees and you need people without degrees in your team to keep that open perspective and diversity of thought.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, we know that a diverse workforce drives innovation, Johnny, as well. So great insight. Johnny, we're going to move on here to the Ask the Audience Codebytes questions. This is where we kind of speak to the software engineering community and we get an idea of perhaps their kind of pain points, challenges, in the hope to pose them to the likes of yourself for some wisdom. And today actually is from a software engineer who's been working with the one consultancy for 10 years. And actually within that 10 years, they've been rotating every couple of years, which means they're a little bit self-critical that they perhaps haven't carved out a niche, you know, in a particular kind of language or skill set. So how would you suggest that they could best promote themselves in today's market with their experience?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting one. So even from the question and the way it's come across, you know, you already sense, you know, that you talk about them being self-critical. You already sense that sense that they feel negative about them being potentially in that position, being, you know, in the same organization for 10 years or being in a consultancy or not having carved themselves out a niche. But that doesn't necessarily have to be a negative, let's be honest. So, you know, there will be things that they have learned in that environment that people won't learn if they haven't been in that environment. So in a consulting firm, you, and this comes back to the point I made earlier about, you know, getting close to real world end users and the clients. In a consulting world, you get a lot closer to clients and end users than you do in a lot of other organizations. So a lot of product firms, a lot of service-based firms, SaaS and otherwise, you tend to be abstracted nearly in a development or engineering role from end users, which is actually a negative, whereas in consulting firm, that's, you know, it's a significant benefit. So again, there's aspects that they have learned there that they can bring forward and emphasize of their experience that companies, whether they know it or not, will desperately need. They need now, and they'll need more so for the future. As I mentioned, you know, there's not enough emphasis on that part of the role, but equally their experience of moving maybe across different projects or in different teams every 2 years itself brings something interesting, because they've had to adapt and adjust to work with different teams with different skill sets. They may have themselves worked with different technologies or in different roles within that team. Everything from, you know, doing the development to maybe doing testing. It's hard to know without knowing more of the background. Mm-hmm. But as I said, They're bound to have experienced different things, worked in different roles, maybe worked with different technologies going through that journey in the 10 years. And that is their strength, essentially. It's that diversity of experience and the fact that they will understand potentially even different projects, styles, different project sizes, different client types. And they need to emphasize that. It's back to that same phrase, diversity. it's a diversity of the work they've done. You'll get people that have worked in a product organization for maybe 10 years, but they've worked on one product with one client, with one set of technologies. You know, again, that in fairness is more of a weakness to this individual who's had a great diversity of work and experience. So again, I think, you know, they need to look at that aspect and not downplay that aspect of diversity. It's becoming, you know, it has been and is becoming more and more sought after, where people have had a diverse experience in the life cycle of a product, in the different technologies and different client types that they've worked with. Because as you'll see, companies are getting leaner in their organizational structure and style in a way. We've seen a lot of layoffs from the big players, Amazon, Google, Facebook. They're realizing that they can do the same with a lot less people, especially if the people have a diversity of skill set and diversity of role. So again, you know, people that are coding, doing aspects of the testing and automating that testing is becoming more, you know, normal. Over the last lot of years, we've also seen and know of the push for full stack. I think that phrase and term is going out a little bit now, and we're going back to people wanting to be in a more dedicated position. But the fact that companies were striving for full stack or striving for, you know, sort of polyglot type people is testament to the fact that they didn't have the finances to fund teams of 10 people with dedicated front-end, dedicated back-end engineers, and dedicated cloud and everything else. You know, so companies are needing to think smarter. Individuals and people working in the space are needing to be more adaptable, more diverse in their skill sets as well. And I don't think it's a negative. You know, there seemed to be, in the last couple of years, this opinion about, you know, you can do a little bit of everything, but you're not master of anything. Again, I don't think that's necessarily true. You know, a lot of people would say if they've learned one language, they can adapt and adjust to a variety of others. Once you know the core principles and theories, and that should be true. Yes, there are a lot of specifics and nuances in various languages and areas that you have to know of to be very good at it and to optimize that skill set, but you don't need everyone to be like that. So having people on the team that have that diversity, and that's where this individual comes from in terms of their background by the sound of things, is actually a benefit to a team and allows them to be a bridging point between various maybe specialists in the team, if you want to put a word on it, in terms of someone who's more front-end engineering, some back-end engineering, and then you have this person in the middle who bridges that together and sort of becomes a glue between various other individuals on the team.
Brilliant. Love that feedback and advice, Johnny. Thank you. And it's all about, you know, I think a lot of organizations are wanting to see adaptability. You know, it's a huge key trait. You know, it's looking forward to having an individual like this coming on board with that diverse workload, stakeholder management, which you mentioned, Johnny. You know, that's a huge benefit. So thank you for that. What advice would you have to any aspiring software engineer in today's market?
Yeah. To me, you know, it may sound a bit corny, but there's nothing else that be yourself. You know, continue to learn. Continue to be involved in the community and give back. You know, always strive to be better. Essentially, none of us are perfect and we'll never reach 100%. Now, I've had folks in performance reviews scoring 100%. I would never score myself 100%. You can always do something better. There's always something new to learn. There's always something to improve. You know, you have to be in that position where you embrace continual learning. Like, I'm continually learning at the minute. You know, in the last 1 month, I've done 2 or 3 different AWS certifications. So whilst I'm in a role of leadership and I do still do hands-on coding, I always see and find something that I can learn, and, you know, some sort of certification I can maybe do to back up the fact that I have learned and I do know what I'm talking about in those spaces. Because, you know, there's no point in being a leader and not knowing what you're talking about. You can't lead people if you don't know what you're leading and who you're leading and that skill set area. So, you know, you still have to learn, regardless of how mature you're in and how many years you've been in the industry. So embrace continued learning. And then more importantly, embrace change. This sector in particular is never stagnant. Everything's always changing. And I think a lot of us got better, forcefully so, to embrace change through COVID, and not necessarily change in technology and our skills, but just change in general. But I think there's a lot to be said for embracing change. There's a lot of organizations, especially in this sector, who can get sort of too stuck in their ways, rest on their laurels and think, oh, we've built it, the solution's great, it works, the client loves it, that's it, we're done. You know, we'll maybe do a little bit here and there. But technology continually evolves. You have to continually review and work out, you know, when do we make changes? And then it's, you know, embracing change in yourself. You always have to look at what's on the horizon. When do I have to adapt and adjust? What other technologies can I learn, especially in the last probably 5+ years, we've seen a lot of people picking up cloud skills. It was necessary, and it has been significantly valuable to those who have. To those who didn't, they've probably found themselves stuck and are either now trying to play catch up, or maybe have got left behind. So again, you know, there's lots there to be acknowledged on those two points about embracing continual learning and change. And then the last point I would make is about being honest about what you do know and what you don't, and acknowledge your willingness and ability to learn what you don't know. There's no point, and I've seen this, I've done, you know, probably hundreds of interviews over the years. I've seen, you know, where people try and blag or say they know something and it's very clear they don't. There's nothing to be ashamed of to say, to be honest, sorry, I don't know that, but I'm willing to learn. And in fairness, if you're in that position, you'll be, you know, again, it's back to attitude when we talked about, you know, identifying those individuals. It's about that attitude. That's a positive attitude to have. It's also something you can work with in an organization. You can support them in their learning. You know, there may be other people in the team have that strength that can fill that gap in their, and that weakness in that individual. And equally, that person coming board likely has strengths that others have as a weakness and can help them in their learning. So again, all comes back to that continual learning and embracing change. If you have that willingness and ability to learn, you're embracing change there first and foremost, and being honest and acknowledging that you don't know everything is fine. As I said, you'll never be 100%.
Love that, Johnny. Love that. Johnny, before we wrap things up, what does the future hold for InclueTech?
So InclueTech are having a great year so far in 2023. You know, for those who follow myself or InclueTech on social media, you've seen a lot of things that have happened. We've been at a lot of events, a lot of exhibitions. We're currently working on a commercial contract for the gas network in the mainland to digitize it with 800 numbers, similarly to what we've done with Tap SOS for the emergency 999. Equally, we're doing sort of some other niche work with the MOD and the Home Office. So we are, and then we're working on a collaborative project with the University of Ulster later this year. And we've got ambitions to then strive further and sort of bring our skill set that we've applied to blue lights and gas into likes of the water and electric sectors as well. So a lot on our plate at the minute. We're building the team. Probably a good point to shout out as well that we're looking at back end front engineers. We're looking at UX individuals. So we're constantly building that team. So if you do certainly have skill set in those areas, you want to challenge and equally have a passion for building inclusive and diverse appeal products, and especially in this area of public safety, then feel free to reach out. We're definitely interested in hearing folks who have a passion specifically for that. Yeah, it looks to be a busy and good year ahead of us.
Definitely very exciting, Johnny. And if people were wanting to find out more about yourself and InclueTech, where's the best place which they can go to?
Yeah, so we do have our website, includetech.co and tapsos.com, but equally we're doing we do a lot of discussions on social media. Hopefully we'll be present at the likes of DDNA and other events throughout the year. There's a lot of events going on, so we'll always try and be present and sort of give our opinions and thoughts, especially on building inclusive products wherever we can. So I would say follow us on LinkedIn and you'll see where we're going to be and the different events we're going to be attending.
Brilliant. I'll hook this as well with the show notes. Johnny, this has been an extremely insightful conversation. Thank you so much.
No, thank you, Stephen. It's been great. Great to share our thoughts and great to hear some of the questions that your audience has.
Brilliant. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, Stephen.